towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of thy Highness.
Moments of silence before the lecture. And in these moments of silence, perhaps we could contemplate the theme of this year's summer school, spiritual liberty, as Hazrat Nai Khan brought that message to us and which has brought us here today. Beloved brothers and sisters, today I'd like to speak on the theme of this year's summer school, spiritual liberty. The Sufi message is the path of spiritual liberty. And what is liberty? According to the definition in the dictionary, liberty is freedom from control, interference, obligation, restriction, and hampering conditions. Liberty is the power or right of doing, thinking, and speaking according to choice. Those of us gathered here today believe and live in the spirit of this liberty. Unfortunately, throughout history, human rights and personal liberties have been violated, all in the name of religion. We can cite the following historical examples: the Muslim conquest, the French wars of religion, the Crusades, the Protestant Reformation, and the Catholic Counter-Reformation. Unfortunately, the litany of such wars is relentless. In truth, religious conflicts more often are the result of cultural and historical differences, leading to the confusing impression that the conflict is primarily about religious differences. We have an example of this in our world today, where acts of political terrorism are justified as acts of a holy war, the jihad. Our worship, Hazrat Nai Khan, brilliantly tried to circumvent misconceptions of the Sufi message as having any particular narrow association with any one religion, by encouraging us to learn and honor all religions. Murshid teaches us in the Gathas, the mystic says the explanation of the whole of religion is the investigation of the self. The more one explores oneself, the more one will understand all religions in the fullest light, and all will become clear. Sufism is only a light thrown upon your own religion. Like a light brought into a room containing all the things you want, the one thing needed was light. A few weeks ago, a Moroccan friend and colleague of mine sent me a poem. This woman is a highly respected scholar, and she's the chair of her academic department at a prominent university in Morocco. As you know, in many parts of the world, there are restrictions on freedom of speech. And people, therefore, use modalities of expression, such as poetry or fictional novels, to convey social and political issues that may be viewed as subversive, too progressive, or threatening to controlling governments. My friend, in spite of her education and the professional respect she's gained over the years, has endured great personal injustice and loss under the family code that was in place from 1957 to 2004 in Morocco, aimed at limiting the liberties of women under the guise of religious law. The poem my friend sent was written by the Syrian diplomat, poet, and publisher, whose name is Nizar Kabani. When Kabani was 15, his sister, who was 25 at the time, committed suicide because she refused to marry a man she did not love. During her funeral, he decided to fight the social conditions he saw as causing her death. When asked whether he was a revolutionary, Kabani answered, "Love in the Arab world is like a prisoner. I want to set it free. I want to free the Arab soul, sense, and body with my poetry. The relationships between men and women in our society are not healthy." At the top of my email, this email sent by my friend, she wrote the words, "To meditate." And I think you would like to know that this poem by Kabani first appeared in the Pakistani newspaper titled The News International in the year, well, actually on the 21st of September, 2008. And it reads like this. In a country where thinkers are assassinated and writers are considered infidels and books are burnt, in societies that refuse the other and force silence on mouths and thoughts forbidden, and to question is a sin, I must beg your pardon. Would you permit me? Would you permit me to bring up my children as I want and not dictate on me your whims and your orders? Would you permit me to teach my children that religion is first to God and not for religious leaders or scholars or people? Would you permit me to teach my little one that religion is about good manners, good behavior, good conduct, and truthfulness before I teach her with which foot to enter the bathroom or with which hand she should eat? Would you permit me to teach my daughter that God is about love and she can dialogue with God and ask God anything she wants, far away from the teachings of anyone. Would you permit me not to mention the torture of the grave to my children, who do not know about death yet? Would you permit me to teach my daughter the tenets of religion and its cultures and manners before I force on her the hijab, the veil? Would you permit me to tell my young son that hurting people and degrading them because of their nationality, color, or religion is considered a big sin by God? Would you permit me to tell my daughter that revising her homework and paying attention to her learning is considered by God as more useful and important than learning by heart ayahs from the Quran without knowing their meaning? Would you permit me to teach my son that following the footsteps of the Honorable Prophet begins with his honesty, loyalty, and truthfulness? Before his beard, and how long his robe is? Would you permit me to tell my daughter that her Christian friend is not an infidel, and ask her not to cry, fearing that her friend will go to hell? Would you permit me to argue that God did not authorize anyone on earth after the Prophet to speak in his name, nor did he vest any powers in anyone to issue deeds of forgiveness to people? Would you permit me to say that God has forbidden killing the human spirit? And one who kills wrongly a human being, as if he has killed all of humankind, and no one, no Muslim, has the right to frighten another or another Muslim? Would you permit me to teach my children that God is greater, more just, and more merciful than all the religious scholars on earth combined? And that his standards are different from the standards of those trading the religion? And that the accountability is kinder and more merciful? Would you permit me sign Nizar Kabani? In 1923, Hazrat Naik Khan made this powerful claim in the New York newspaper. Caste is forgotten among those who are in the order. I recognize no caste, no nationality, no creed. We are all brothers and sisters. And in every man is a spark of the divine. Perfect international unity and harmony is our aim. This is from the collective interviews, by the way. For the Collective Works, 1923. And in 1926, Hazrat Naik Khan gave this visionary message over the American radio. He said, "The Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity." We've heard this, yes? We hear him speak this to us. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The Sufi message means wisdom, which comes from the root Safiya. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity. in order that people may come together in a better understanding, arising beyond the different sections of castes and creeds which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today. At this moment, when materialism is all-pervading and commercialism is continually on the increase, the Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all the prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goal of all. Wisdom is one. For those of us here, together, who are drawn to the path of spiritual liberty, the Sufi message, which is a universal Sufi message, let us contemplate this liberty, this freedom. And what is more, let us contemplate our responsibility in upholding this liberty. In Hazrat Anayat Khan's biography, we read, "When our ship arrived in the harbor of New York, the first land of my destination, I saw before me the welcoming figure of the Statue of Liberty, an idol of rock, which I felt was awaiting the hour to turn into an ideal, awaiting the moment to rise from material liberty to spiritual liberty. Its wings suggested to me that it wanted to spread from national liberty to world liberty. Some of us may feel that no sacrifice is too small in the cause of liberty. Certainly our elder sister, Nora Nisa Anayat Khan, believed wholeheartedly in liberty. Let us never forget what those who witnessed the execution of our sister, Nora Nisa, have told us. On her dying breath, her last word was, "Liberty!" How much this liberty was instilled in her heart and her soul from birth. Murshid teaches us in the Gayan, a living word is life itself. Liberty, a word. This living word, which was spoken by Nora Nisa with all the vitality of her life force at the moment of her last breath on this earth. In the social gathikas, we find these words. Do we not see that there is one person, perhaps, who comes to us and speaks 1,000 words, and not one word strikes us? There is another who comes to us and speaks one word, but it penetrates. It's like an impression. That word is of value. For there is a living word. A living word has life and it acts chemically. The living word will go on and float into space, and it will go into the hearts of men and women and do its work. That is from the Power of Silence, Social Gothic. The living words of our Master, spiritual liberty, become a living ideal through our thoughts, our words, our actions, and our interactions. Let us not imprison ourselves or others by attempting to confine this great message by limiting it to one spiritual or religious tradition. It is for all. Now, I have to tell you, in my own country, the United States of America, where Merchant first came, he saw this ideal and prayed for this ideal of world liberty. We find that there is a great emphasis when giving the Sufi message to give it an Islamic orientation or to make a deliberate attempt to associate it with classical Sufism. I must tell you that for some, this orientation is disheartening and it's a matter of confusion, especially for those new to the Sufi message. I hope you are like me and that you find that the message will become lost in view of these kinds of interpretations. And to all this I say, friends, the Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan does not need and should not be limited by such interpretations. Jalaluddin Rumi says, "The soul is imprisoned in the mortal body, and its constant aim is to be free and to experience that liberty which is its very nature." Hazrat Inayat Khan elaborates and says it in this way: limitations and boundaries are inevitable. And conventions are natural and necessary, but they nonetheless separate humanity. It is the wise who can meet one another beyond these boundaries. And that is from Sufi Message, Volume 1, The Way of Illumination. Let us not impose limitations and boundaries around this great Sufi message that unites us. We are here today because of that. By giving the message a narrow definition, instead let us become the living examples of the message through sincere dedication and cultivation of our inner environment. And this is through committed study of the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan, the path of initiation and discipleship, and an inner mystical moral culture that can serve to illuminate us to all religions and spiritual traditions. The great poet Kabir says, "Life is a field, and you are born to cultivate it. And if you know how to cultivate this field, you can produce anything that you like. All the need of your life can be produced in this field, if you know how to cultivate it and how to reap the fruit." Murshid elaborates this point further by teaching us, "If this opportunity is only studied in order to make the best of life by taking all that one can take and by being more comfortable, that is not satisfying. We must enrich ourselves with thought, with that happiness which is spiritual happiness, with that peace which belongs to our soul, with that liberty, that freedom, which our soul longs, and to attain the, that higher knowledge which breaks all the fetters of life and raises our consciousness, to look at life from a different point of view. Once a person has realized this opportunity, he has realized and fulfilled the purpose of life. Hazrat Inayat Khan has given us the vast lineage of teachings in our Sufi movement, and Murshid said years ago, "Our movement renders a service to God and humanity without any intention of forming an exclusive community, but of uniting in this service people of all the different religions. This movement is in its infancy, and it is only beginning to work. But its culmination will be a world movement. It is the world message and the religion which will be the religion of the whole of humanity. A religion which does not distract the mind of any purpose or from the path of his own faith, but makes it more firm, more enlightened, more sympathetic to his own religion. It is a religion which teaches tolerance towards the faith of another, a religion which opens the heart to the words of wisdom, no matter what direction they come from. This is not only a church, but a school in which to learn a lesson of tolerance, to learn to revere all teachers, and to respect all scriptures. A lesson which teaches us that we need not give up our own religion, but that we should embrace all religions in order to make the sacredness of religion perfect. From this statement, we can learn that to narrowly categorize the Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan, held in esteem by the body of teachings for which we are responsible, in this Sufi movement, would be like looking at the whole universe through an inverted peephole or the wrong end of a kaleidoscope. The Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan needs not our own limited justification nor any authentication by any attempts to make it a part of anything else. It is universal. And again I say, we need not validate the message by limiting the message according to inaccurate definitions, some of these found in the dictionary or the encyclopedia, stating that Sufism is the mystical branch of Islam. In Murshid's own words, he asked, "Is Sufism Muslim?" And Murshid's answer to this is, if the following of Islam is understood to mean the obligatory adherence to a certain rite, if being a Mohammedan means conforming to certain restrictions, how can a Sufi be placed in that category? Seeing that the Sufi is beyond all limitations of this kind. So far from not accepting the Quran, the Sufi recognizes scriptures which others disregard. But the Sufi does not follow any special book. The shining ones, such as Attar, Shemsa Tabriz, Rumi, Sadi, and Hafiz, have expressed their free thought with complete liberty of language. To a Sufi, revelation, maybe revolution also, is the inherent property of every soul. There is an unceasing flow of the divine stream, which has neither beginning nor end. Again, that is from Sufi Message, Volume 1. And what is the unceasing flow of the divine stream? It is the stream of universal love itself. Hazrat Anay Khan highlights the principle of love in the teaching, which reads, according to the ideas of the Sufis and of all the prophets and sages who ever came to the world, the love principle was the first principle. And so it is also the last principle. There are different yogas practiced by the people of India that are intellectual, scientific, philosophical, and moral paths to God. However, the most desirable path to God that the Hindus have ever found, one which makes the whole of life beautiful, is Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion. For it is the natural path. Man's inclination is love. If he's cold, it's because he's longing for love. If he's warm, it is because love is alive. If he's suffering from depression, is yearning or sorrowing, it is because the love principle is not alive. The only life, the very source of inspiration, salvation, and liberation is love. Murshid goes on to say, great souls who have brought the message of God to humanity from time to time, like Buddha, Krishna, Jesus Christ, Moses, Abraham, Zarathustra, were all known as the most learned men. But whatever they learned from that love principle. What they knew was compassion, forgiveness, sympathy, tolerance, the attitude of appreciation, the opening of the heart to humanity. What they taught was love, a simple truth. If religion seems complex, they have been added to, in every case, what the various prophets brought was simple. And what was expressed in their personality and their life was simple. It is that influence which has remained for centuries after they have passed. It's not the literature that they left. Most of the literature was from their pupils. It is the simple truth of their own personalities. And for us to turn into that magnificent being of Hazrat Anay Khan, the error of this day and age is that we cannot understand the simple truth. The truth as it is manifest everywhere. Instead, we're trying to find truth covered by a shell. So let's not make a hollow shell of the message. Let us turn and keep tuning to the truth of the vibration of the message. Let us resist any temptation to confine the universal message of love, harmony, and beauty for doing so is like trying to put the infinite sky in a box. Let us turn to Hazrat Inayat Khan's own words, which we find in the collective interviews of 1923. Sufism is not a religion, nor even a culture, as distinct or definite doctrine. There is no better explanation of Sufism than saying that any person who has knowledge of life outside and within is a Sufi. Therefore, there has not been any period of the world's history a founder or an exponent of Sufism, but it has been all the time. No doubt, as we can find that since the time of Abraham, there have been esoteric schools. Many of them were called Sufi schools. The schools of Arabia had an Arabic culture, which was more metaphysical. The schools of Persia developed a more literary aspect, and the Sufi schools of India developed a meditative faculty. But the truth and the ideal has remained the same. As the central theme of Sufism, which is wisdom, is found in all these schools. No doubt, every school has its own method, and in every method, it is colored by the personality of the teacher. There are schools of dervishes, there are schools of fakirs, there are schools of saliks, who teach the moral culture with the philosophical truth. Murshid goes on to say, personally, I owe every obligation to the Sufi school of the Chistis, in which I was initiated by my murshid, Abu Hashim Madani. But there, the account of the ancient Sufi history finishes. Now I wish to explain to you our movement. Again, these are murshid's words. Now I wish to explain to you our movement. Our movement is a movement of members of different nations and different races united in the ideal of wisdom. Just look around the room here today and all the various countries that Murshid Hidayat listed yesterday. How extraordinary. We're here. We're that living reality. Murshid goes on to say, wisdom does not belong to any particular religion or any particular race. Wisdom belongs to the human race. It is a divine property which mankind has inherited. It is the realization that we, in spite of different nationalities and races and different beliefs and different faiths, still unite and work for humanity and the ideal of wisdom. Worship goes further and says, our school today, having a wider field of work, we are presenting to the followers of all religions, besides to those who have perhaps no religion, to a spiritual person, to a material person, both. Therefore, the realm in which the esoteric school of the Sufi movement presents its method is necessarily different or distinct in itself. The representatives of our inner school, therefore, and those who are initiated, have a more general idea of Sufism than those belonging to other schools, who only have an idea of their particular section. Therefore, again, these are Murshid's words, therefore you should not be surprised if one of our initiated members of the Sufi movement proved his outlook a wider outlook. compared with a member of other sectional schools of Sufis. However, you will find the central theme the same. This I have not said in order for us to be proud of our broadness, Murshid continues. It is only said in order that we may try in our life, that we may keep up to that ideal and not fall short of that broader outlook and that broader ideal. For the life on this earth has a tendency to drag us to narrowness. And therefore, we must know that we have continually that fight all along in our progress on the spiritual path. Remember that unity is strength. And working for the unity of the world is a greater strength still. Again, Murshid's words. Remember that unity is strength. And working for the unity of the world is a greater strength still. In closing, let each one of us search within our own heart and ask, what is this spiritual liberty which is emphasized again and again by Hazrat Inayat Khan? And let us contemplate, let us consider the world and the culture into which Murshid was originally born. And ask ourselves, why did Murshid leave his native land, which is known to have all the various religions and various creeds and various caste systems, in the pursuit of spreading the Sufi message of spiritual liberty? If we can come to truly and deeply understand this, we would not dare draw unparalleled restrictions on this message. But each of us, like Noor Nisa, on our dying breath, would shout, liberty! May I offer this wish and this prayer for all of us here. May the authentic vibration of the Sufi message of Hazrat Inayat Khan inspire us constantly in the pursuit of the truth of spiritual liberty and worldwide liberty. May the might of our unity in this pursuit be ever and renewably strengthened. May we forever strive to tear down the scaffolding and constricted beliefs in the pursuit of spiritual liberty. May we continually be reborn into an aliveness and freshness and openness of spiritual liberty that can only be likened to standing on a mountaintop where our view is absolutely free and boundless. And may each one of you be blessed in your service, whatever that may be, towards this great Sufi message expressed through love, harmony, and beauty.